welcome to the FinTech Scaling Show. This podcast is sponsored by Scale Up Consulting, helping FinTech startups create a scalable organization to support an ever-increasing demand. When you're ready to grow, reach out to us at richard@scaleupconsulting.co. Now, over to the show with Richard Doty, founder and host. Hey, what's up, everyone, and welcome back to another episode of the FinTech Scaling Show, where we talk to world-class operators and we get their insights on not only how to scale up their businesses, but also how to scale up themselves. And this week on the show, we have Peter. Peter is the co-founder and CEO of Smart Migrator, and super stoked to have him on the show. Peter's an entrepreneur at heart. I mean, when we first met, he was telling me about his story when he was 13 years old and, you know, how he started up a business at that young age. So he's an entrepreneur. He runs multiple businesses, of which Smart Migrator is one. He also works across other sort of areas and industries and a non-exec. It also consists of Chamber of Commerce, et cetera. So super stoked to have you on the show today, Peter. Welcome.
Thank you, Richard. Great to be here. I'm really looking forward to this, and hopefully we can give lots of insights to your audience.
Yeah, let's do that. Let's have fun today. I'm up for it. And just to go back a couple of steps, and I said, you know, at 13, you were always out and looking for that opportunity, making a challenge into an opportunity, looking for maybe things that other 13-year-olds weren't looking for. And, you know, I'd like to get a bit of insight into that. I mean, as a 13-year-old, how do you think, you know, what goes through you to say, listen, I'm quite keen to look at that challenge that my dad has and solve it and actually make something of it? I mean, take us back to that time and give us a bit of insight as to your startup journey as a 13-year-old.
Certainly, that brings me back very fond memories. And it wasn't actually a challenge that my father was looking to solve, but I think he tried to get me involved in working at a young age. So I used to go to the office quite often and really I was really interested in how things work. He was running a business which was automotive consumables import and distribution, a business that I later scaled in once I finished my education. But it was really through noticing. Well, my father got a lot of corporate merchandise sent by our suppliers, and they were just collecting dust. There was only a fraction of promo materials that he could give away to customers and partners. So one day I got this idea, and instead of sitting dust, I saw a lot of these things could be saleable. And there was quite a variety, you know, extending from pens and mouse mats and lots of other things. So I got together a sample kit. I just made up some prices on in my head, and I just started sort of pitching them around different shops in our local area. Hmm. I thought it was, well, it doesn't hurt trying. And to my surprise, they started picking up. Whether it was a case of they were excited that such a young boy is trying to sell them and make a business, and they just wanted to support me, but they were actually selling them. So it worked. And over a few months' time, I had a number of customers, and I was generating what was the equivalent of a few average monthly salaries that people have. So that was really sort of my first taste of entrepreneurship, and it's never left me since. It's gone stronger and stronger over the years.
Awesome. I got a similar story, although the outcome maybe isn't as rosy as yours. When I was maybe 14 or so, I was in boarding school in South Africa. And one thing that is always, always needed in an all-boys school, in an all-boys boarding school, is someone that can cut hair. it is always needed because boarding school and boys are pretty sloppy and pretty dirty and mucky. But hey, you know, I decided, I said to my folks, I said, the guys definitely need some help here because actually I remember the reason why. We had to pay like 1 rand, which is like 10p or something like that, 1 rand to go out just to get the taxi or the bus down the road to get to the hairdressers. And, you know, 1 rand back in the day, 20 or 25 years ago, is a lot of money. So we'd rather spend that money on food. So yeah, I saved up and bought one of the, you know, the clippers, as you have the barbers nowadays, you've got these clippers. So I bought that. I was like, yeah, this is it, right? I'm going to be able to cut everyone's hair. And I did. I was pretty ace. I was in demand. I was loving life. I was cutting the first team rugby boys' hair, the rowers, everything, the prefects. Then I vividly recall that one day we were breaking up and one of the prefects, his name was Richard Azor. I even remember his name. He said, yeah, Rich, yeah, come into my, you know, they have these cubicles as prefects, come in and I need a haircut because, you know, I'm going out tonight with my girlfriend and what have you. I said, yeah, cool. No, I'll be fine. So you need to hurry up because, you know, my dad's here. We need to get this going. So, oh, yeah, cool. Let me help you out. Let me do that. So I did it very quickly. And he asked for something called a step. Do you remember what a step is? A step. This is basically,
I'm not sure.
Like short hair on the sides and long hair on the top.
So, oh, yes.
Listen, I'm not, this anyway. So I did that for him, but I got it completely wrong. It was the worst haircut ever. And I sort of said to him, looks really nice. And I packed up my stuff and I said, listen, I'll see you next term. And he said, yeah, cool, great. Saw him next term. He wasn't happy, right? Because he had to shave all his hair off. And my business went down the drain after that. I was like, I put it away. And I thought, let's think of something else to do. But I completely relate to you when you say, you know, young age, you know, you're looking for different types of opportunities to expand your horizon beyond just the pen and paper or the sports field, right? And those are the, sometimes those are the lessons we learn that allow us to really go on our path and even at a young age, sort of start thinking about a purpose potentially that you want to achieve and you want to go after in life. And I also know that we've spoken a lot about purpose and what have you. And as a founder, what do you think having a purpose means to you? How do you think that would help you in any way, shape, or form? Or does it help you at all?
Well, I think everybody has a purpose. Some may not have yet found a big purpose in life. As a founder, I mean, many people become founders because they look at other success stories and they have a great idea and they say, well, I can scale this, make this into a big business. I can make a lot of money. And whilst many will say money is not the driving factor, I think everybody will be lying if they say that money is not a big motivation. Yeah. It certainly is. But what people find that over time, money becomes a byproduct of their work, but it's not really what motivates them into building a business. So for me, it's really about making an impact on society, on this world. I've always been very passionate about nature and our planet, and that's why a lot of my background has been in renewable energy and clean tech in general. So for me, it's really been evolving over the years into doing a business that has a very strong culture, that has a purpose going beyond just making a big business, making lots of profits, but really looking at how can we contribute and make an impact through our work and have an impact that's, to me, impacting positively the planet, which is very, very current topic at the moment, but also impacting society overall and looking at all the disbalances and problems that are out there. And I think we can all do good in addition to growing a good business.
Mm. Yeah, I like that. And I think, you know, having that strong purpose, whatever it may be, and I love what you said, that you don't have to be a founder or an executive. You can be anyone out there. You all have to have a purpose as to where you want to go, who you want to be. And, you know, recently, it's interesting. I mean, I'll sort of bring this into the conversation because we are talking about how to live life on your terms as a founder. And, you know, myself, I mean, I've got two young kids and they're great. And they're only 6 and 7. So, you know, a lot of life left to live. And they absolutely love this game called tennis. Are besotted by it. Which is great. I mean, they're good players and then they go out and have some fun and they get out and they meet themselves. But it's also drawn me closer to this world of tennis and what we call tennis mums and dads or tennis parents. And it is very interesting to listen to these folks and they're trying to really figure out the path for their kids, whether it's academics or it's a sport. And I always like to look at it. I think it doesn't have to be one or the other, right? Don't worry about it. Look at the larger thing in life, you know. If you go down one path, it doesn't mean that you're going to miss out on the other because you're going to be educated in just maybe a slightly different way than someone else was educated. You might not go to Harvard, or you might not go to, I don't know, King's College or whatever it is. It doesn't mean that you're not going to live a fulfilled life, right? It just depends, you know, where you as a person, 16, 17, 18, want to go, right? And even bringing that type of thinking into this tennis ecosystem is a bit of a mindset shift for everyone, because they all in this mold of society says to us, we've got to either do really well in academics, or we've got to do really well in sport to achieve whatever we want in life. And that's bullshit, right? Let's put the cards on the table. It's absolute bullshit. What you've got to have is you've got to have a strong and powerful purpose, to your point, and then have a bit of fun with it, right?
Absolutely. I totally agree. And in fact, you don't know, but I actually used to be a competitive tennis player in my in my school days, so I can totally relate to that. Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely love it to this day. And I mean, I remember back in my school days, I was lucky to go in a really good school when I moved from where I'm originally from, which is Bulgaria in Eastern Europe, and I moved to the UK some 26 years ago. I went to a school that was really big on sports. It has outstanding reputation academically, but it was really, really big on sports. And what I found was that the boys and girls who performed best academically were also the ones who are really involved in sports. And I later in life, I discovered a lot of research done about the psychology and the development in children. And it's really important to experiment and try new things. And that's something that I'm also doing with my young son, who's nearly 10, really not allowing him the opportunity to try new things, see where his passions are, because it will evolve. I mean, where I thought I will be years from back then, it's completely different to where I am today. But it's important not to restrict yourself and to try new things. And I think the same applies to entrepreneurs as well. You will have many, many flops. I've had many flops in my life. Yeah. Some are on my LinkedIn, some are not on my LinkedIn. But that's how you learn. And very few successful founders try it first time. And even if they do, it doesn't mean that the next journey is going to be successful. But that's part of life and part of being having fun as an entrepreneur.
I love it. No, I love it. And it is life, right? This is what we're talking about. So, you know, I got a call earlier on with just to bring it sort of down to the brass bears here, so people listening can really understand what Pete and myself are talking about. So, I mean, I had a chat with a prospect earlier on, a new prospect that came through the pipe, and we're having a chat. And at the end of it, you know, he said to me, Richard, what is the most critical KPI you look at that means you're going to be successful next week, next month, etc.? And I looked at him and I just smiled and I said, listen, I could maybe come up with something fancy here, but the ultimate thing is me smiling, me happy, and that ecosystem, those people around you also feeling that love and that warmth, right? And that happiness, right? And if you have that, then, you know, everything else sort of falls into place. That's really not the answer he is looking for. But it's true, right? That's sort of life as a founder. If you're looking for a quick buck, or you're looking for something else, then maybe you're in the wrong, this is the wrong sort of game for you. But if you're looking to try, like, as you mentioned, if you're looking to try stuff out, to test stuff, to be willing to fail, but take on the knowledge to get better next time, that's the journey. That's the journey of life. That's the journey of a founder.
I totally agree with you, Richard. And I've been lucky because I'm based in London for many years, and I've met a number of very successful founders through events happening in London, some very, very big unicorns, multi-billionaires. And I always ask them three things. What are the three key nuggets of wisdom that led to your success? And usually, for most, two out of the three was having a strong purpose and aligning the team on that purpose. Yeah. And the second was surrounding themselves with people that are smarter than them. And it all comes to me, I think many people, many founders focus on small details like the KPIs, and they see a lot of fancy terms out there. Yeah. But you really have to look at the big picture and what does it take to make a successful business? And for me, that's all about people. Having the right people, having the right synergy, the right purpose. I see all the time companies in their mission statements saying how they're customer obsessed or customer focused. But for me, the companies that are most successful are the ones that are people focused, because if you have a really strong culture that people support each other, people thrive and grow, and you are essentially one family as a unit, that translates into how they interact with customers, with suppliers. You can be customer obsessed, but if you're not obsessed about your people and making them really, really strong individuals and committed to the purpose, that's not going to work for how you become customer focused. That's my thinking.
No, your thinking's powerful. And, I like to call this, I think there's leadership plus communication plus relationships are going to equal, revenue, right? Let's bring it back to the brass knuckles here. We are obviously, scaling up, our businesses and our lives. But those three elements, what I like to call the LCR triangle, are really important to think through and understand as you walk through your journey as a founder or executive, or even if you're just walking through your journey as someone that's trying to search for something, right? But those three elements, leadership, communication, and relationships, are powerful if they work together and in unison. And your point there around people, so that's an interesting one, right? Because people, a lot of times people think of, okay, we're going to look after our people, and they think the people inside the organization. But spread your net wider, open up, yeah? Your people are your potential employees. There's a lot of chatter around the difficulty with hiring people. Why? is the question I ask. So potential employees, your partners, your customers, obviously the people that you work with, even goes far as saying the family members of those people you work with. I was chatting to a very good friend of mine who is out stateside a number of weeks ago, and he mentioned to me, he worked for Warren Buffett, right? So he did some great stuff for Warren Buffett out in Pennsylvania, I think it was, that way. And he built up one of Buffett's insurance companies to a pretty good status. And he said to me, he said, the one big thing that will allow you as a company to continue to grow is also looking outside the box of an employee. Considering the wife or the husband, the children, even the grandparents, etc., and making that a community in and of itself. And that's where you get scalability. Because if you bring that family along for the journey, then no one really wants to leave, right? Because we're all in together. So, people, I love what you're saying, but look broader. What I think is you need to look broader than just internal, right?
Absolutely. And that's one of the things that I've been fascinated by around the last 18 months of suffering we've had with the COVID-19 pandemic.
Yeah.
I think people have had the time to really rethink priorities and what's important and how many have lost their work and life balance and become roboticized by the workplace.
Yeah.
And I've seen an evolution of how the companies that really care about their talent have really stood out and become very successful. And I mean, recently there was some study that came out here in the UK. I can't remember the exact figure, but I think it was about a third of people were looking to change their jobs.
Yeah.
Because they're not happy. And you're absolutely right. I think it extends to the family. I think the companies that have a strong culture that looks after their individual members, looks at their problems and how they can support them, I think they're the ones that are going to be successful in the future. Mm. And it all comes back to people and culture. I think it's so important. And I see companies that inspire me who just look after every single member of the organization. Doesn't matter whether it's a dozen or thousands. And as they grow bigger, it becomes more challenging. But that's where you see the shining stars in the global marketplace. They just look at individual members, look at what's important for them, because it's different for different people, and just support them and empower them to grow and grow their purpose. And I think that's been really fascinating to see. And some companies will suffer big time going forward. I already see a very simple example is the hybrid working. Yeah. Some companies are still insisting on people coming back full-time to their office. But that's not how things work. And people found a lot of benefits of having that flexibility to go to the office when it matters, but also to have that freedom of working from home, taking more greater care of their family and other personal matters they have.
Yeah, completely in sync with that. And, you know, you mentioned COVID there, and, you know, I'd like to get your sense, other than what we've chatted about previously, what are you interested in right now as we move into maybe our inverted commas here, if you're not watching on YouTube, and as we move forward sort of beyond COVID, what excites you about the new year and also this new space that we're entering into?
I think you're right to put inverted commas, because I think we will be suffering for some time to come. It's not going to be disappearing overnight.
Yeah.
I mean, one of the things that excites me is just what we talked about, is the fact to see how the future of work is changing and how company cultures evolve, and seeing which will come out as winners and which will be stubborn and not transform and change with the flow, and really start thinking carefully about what's important within the business. I think technology has a huge part to play going forward. It has been critical since many, many years ago, but I think it's going to be even more important going forward to enable that change in the workplace and how companies operate. But also I think, and it's something I'm really excited about, is to see how that people and companies are starting to wake up to the climate crisis. I think there are a lot of positives to draw out from the recent COP26, even though there were some disappointments as well. But I think people are starting to be more wary and trying to take action. And I think this is an element that's going to be really, really important going forward. And I expect a few years from now that having strong net zero commitments and ingraining that into the company culture is going to be the norm. So this is another aspect I'm really, really interested in. And also how the talent marketplace changes, because I think there's a lot of talk about the big shortage and the problems with finding the right talent. And to me, it all fits in, everything fits into one. And I think it's going to be the companies that really have built that strong culture, aligning everybody with a strong purpose, of which their environmental and social element will play a big part in the winners. And how this is going to evolve, because I think companies that make the right mix and have that strong purpose are going to be taking a lot of the good talent out of the ones that still have that legacy thinking.
Yeah, I hear you. And right now, I mean, you mentioned here the talent, you mentioned culture, purpose. Things have moved on, right? So let's not beat around the bush. Things have moved on, and communication is not what it was 20 years ago. It's not what it was 10 years ago. It's not even what it was 2 years ago. It's even evolved in the last 6 months. And coming out of this pandemic and then heading into 2022, as a CEO, founder, you got to be on the button, right? If you want the top talents, if you want the top investors to come seeking you out, you got to be able to, you yourself have to take responsibility for the communication that's coming out of your business. And I think now's the time for your tech leaders, executives, to really take this opportunity by its hands, right? And rise above the noise, start trying things out that maybe they haven't done previously. Because as you mentioned, there's more people online. There's more people that want flexibility. So the quicker we're able to adjust to that, the more benefits you're going to get out of it. And then it's back to the topic of our conversation. You're going to be able to live life on your terms. If you're able to communicate and generate that demand, and generating demand is not always just generating money, it could be generating quality talent into your business, you're going to be less stressed. You're going to start enjoying stuff, right? You're going to have a bit of fun with your business.
Yes, absolutely right. I think communication is going to be absolutely key. It's going to be one of the most important elements of success going forward, especially as we move into a permanent hybrid workplace. And everybody is evolving. The investment space is evolving. They're looking at how do companies build a scalable business given all the challenges that are currently out there, talent being one of them, but also how do you create and scale an organization that can be global, which is the case with many tech companies, and make it work? And I think it is a challenge that causes many sleepless nights for people, but it's also an opportunity. And I think during difficult times come some of the best businesses and opportunities on the marketplace. So I think it will be people who really embrace what's happening and what they can do to really stand out that will have success going forward. Many have been on the back burner and really going as they were in the past, but I think society is definitely waking up and we need to really start thinking about what we're causing, not just to the planet, but also to humanity. Yeah. I know there's a lot of talk about diversity and inclusion. We're very big on that topic, and we want to set an example to other tech founders and companies that you can build a profitable business that scales, but at the same time, do good for the planet, do good for humanity, give everybody equal opportunity, because diversity equals creativity for me. You know, if you don't have a diverse and inclusive and give everybody the equal opportunity and draw on their talents and motivate them, I think you're restricting the creative engine that makes business successful.
But so let's stay in there for a second, because you know this is obviously a passion for you. If I'm a startup founder or you know an executive, or even a scale up, and I want to go down that route, I want to make certain that what I create doesn't only generate profits, doesn't only hire great talent, but also has an impact on society the way you're saying you want to have an impact. What should I be doing? Well, what should I be looking out for? What communities maybe should I be reaching out to or leaning into?
Well, at the moment, especially in the run-up to COP26 and since, there's been a lot of activity going on. I would say, I mean, there's a few key elements. First of all, a strong net zero commitment. There are multiple sources that companies can make a pledge to become net zero and really start making a contribution towards their own impact on the climate. There are many, many tools which are evolving that helps companies and startups to measure their current footprint and then take steps to and give guidance to reduce. There are consultancies that can do that, but they can cost quite a bit of money for founders. And as Cash Strip founders, we're trying the best we can with the money we have. So, but there's a lot of, I mean, Google is a great source. LinkedIn is a great source. I found a lot of different organizations and communities through searching on Google and on LinkedIn. And it's really, I think the first step is really looking at what are you trying to achieve? And that also depends on the purpose of the business. I mean, we're a traditional B2B software business that's for profit. There are some which are social enterprises. So they've got a very different view on things. Mm. What we're trying to achieve is essentially do good for the planet and for society whilst not crossing that line that puts us into the sort of the borderline into social enterprise space. Because that we still want to be able to grow fast. We want to have access to all the investors, but that doesn't stop us from doing good. So looking at really the, I would suggest looking at the UN Sustainable Development Goals, which encompass both climate and social inequalities.
Yeah.
And really looking at organizations and communities that can help. And then really looking at the purpose that you can embed into your coach. I mean, it's difficult to say because for me, purpose either exists or it doesn't through the founders. If the founders have a genuine passion for doing good, whether that's a particular social cause or a climate cause, it's very difficult. You can't mimic and try to be something you're not. There are lots of dangers around. Everybody's trying, all the big corporates are now trying to show an impact, whether that's from planting trees or other initiatives. And that's where there's a danger of greenwashing, which there's been a lot of press and a lot of things happening that have sort of really opened up practices that are not very ethical in some organizations. So really have to plan. I've personally spent a lot of time because I'm spearheading this in my business. And I'll be more than happy to help any founders who are really struggling to get that direction. Feel free to connect with me on LinkedIn afterwards. But you've got to really find a balance that works for you, and that may evolve over time, and then get the founding team aligned, because that can be a challenge in itself.
You mentioned some challenges, but what are the realities of running a startup or running a business? in the way that you described. Yeah, what are the realities?
Well, the reality is, I think as founders, it can be tough, and it is very tough.
I feel like it's something else to think about, but I think it's a good thing to think about, because you can't just point the finger at the politicians. You also, you know, you got to point the finger at yourself, right? But I'm just trying to figure out, maybe also for the listeners, how having this maybe separate function in a way works, or is it not a separate function? Is it, as we've already spoken about, is it more grander than that? Is it the purpose? My purpose is to build a scalable business, but it needs to be a scalable business that impacts both society and the planet for future generations. I'm just trying to figure it out here.
I think getting a purpose beyond just maximizing profits and growing the business, I think it actually it brings a lot of motivation. And I've seen this with some of my team already. I mean, being founders is not easy. I like to compare the founder journey as a cardiogram in hospitals, you know, sort of ups and downs all the time. But it's really getting what really excites you and you're passionate about. I think that sort of gets you through the difficult times. And also talking to people, supporting each other during difficult times. I'm a very big fan, and he's a true inspiration for me, the former CEO of Unilever, Paul Polman, who transformed Unilever into a company that's doing good for business and doing good for the planet. I think, and he started that net positive movement that really tries to bring a global change and makes senior leaders really think about not just maximizing profits, but doing good. And I think it's going to have a massive impact. And it's since we really started getting a very clear picture on our net positive journey, I think we've already had some really fantastic comments from people we talk to. And I think if founders really think what they can do that aligns with their own personal values, I think they'll be on the winning journey. Because if you focus purely on the products or services you're doing and how you can grow and scale without taking any notice of what's happening out there in society, I think there'll be challenges ahead, because talent is waking up. You know, they're looking for a bigger purpose. Mm. Investors are also starting to wake up, because they're looking at what contribution companies will do. And whilst, yes, traditional investors are focusing on maximizing profits, unless you've got a bigger purpose, you will struggle to build the building blocks that make a successful business, of which talent is arguably the most important. So I think it's important, and it doesn't mean to go to extremes in doing good, like some famous companies out there. Good example, Patagonia. They're an inspiration for many, but they're too extreme for some in terms of shifting away from looking at profits and maximizing the benefit that they do on society.
Yeah.
So I think everybody can do something. It could be something small, and it's better to start small and grow it rather than try and push too much and then find yourselves later that, well, we're actually really overstretching ourselves. But I think if everybody does a little bit on a global scale, we'll solve all the problems we have out there. Not just climate, but all the other problems.
Yeah. And it sounds like you can embed this into your, the way to do this is from a startup or scale-up perspective as a founder or executive. Look at the purpose. Look at what you want to achieve. And if you want to include these type of things into your business, then you include them into your purpose. And then back to the topic of today, you know, you're making certain you live life on your terms. Not on someone else's term, i.e. an investor comes along and says, sorry, you're not thinking about, you know, society or the planet, so we're not going to invest with you. Just as an example, live it on your terms. If you want to include in your purpose, that's where it's going to really impact your business, your culture, and obviously sort of moving forward. And we've spoken a lot about people today, because I think obviously it's a wide subject, right? And you know, I wanted to get your insights. I mean, as you've been on your journey, multiple journeys you've been on, I know that. And you know, what do you think is the benefit for early stages, or you know, for startups, founders, executives on their journey? What's the benefit for getting some help on their journey, expanding, being able, so they are able to expand their horizons, they're able to take in and expand their purpose, if they need to expand their purpose. What is your insights, or what are your learnings in that space?
I think businesses need help at every single stage of their journey, but I think it's especially important in the early days, because people make mistakes. Even if you've been through the journey multiple times, you still make mistakes. I mean, I have experience in other sectors, but software for me is a completely new experience. Yeah. And that's, I think, where some founders who live in very strong entrepreneurship and innovation hubs like London, like Frankfurt, then, you know, in Europe, like Paris, they've got this unfair advantage because there's such a strong ecosystem that supports founders. But even those who live elsewhere and based elsewhere, what the pandemic has brought is an opportunity where you can get a lot of help remotely, virtually. Yeah. A lot of accelerators have opened and are running virtual cohorts. So they're extending the reach to parts of the world where entrepreneurs are really struggling to get things off the ground and get that help. But I think it's really important, and something we've taken on board, you know, you have accelerators. Yeah. Some are completely free. Yeah. Some are taking a small percentage of equity, but then you evaluate what you get out of that. But it's really important to get that mentorship, get that experience that can help you build the building blocks. Because as tech founders, most of the time, not in all cases, but most of the time, they have technical backgrounds. They've got a great idea. They build that product to a sort of a certain stage, typically an MVP, could be even pre-MVP. Yeah. But they have very little knowledge and experience. How do they take this and make it into a business?
Yeah.
And I think for most tech founders, that's where getting help from business support groups, from accelerators, that's where they really sort of build those missing elements to make it into a business that can accelerate. So I would welcome and really, really recommend to all founders to try and get to organizations that support the ecosystem where you are. Or just go on Google, make a search for tech accelerators.
Yeah,
you'll find loads of them. Some are harder to get into, others are quite open, but help is really important. And as you grow, I think it's the help changes. That's where having really building strong advisory boards of people who have been through the journey, people who have got specific skills and experience, really make a big difference. And coaching. I think coaching, not just for the team, but for the founders. I'm lucky to know a few very good coaches that have been helping me already on the journey. And founders can find themselves in a very lonely place, because it's you need to talk to each other and pick yourself up, because you've got so much responsibility that sometimes it gets a little bit too much. And to have people to talk to and share and get that sort of kick in the backside and get that balance back, you know, think about your health, think about what you're doing. It's so easy to get lost and over sort of burned out. So I think that getting help is especially critical in the early days, but it's really important throughout the journey.
Yeah. Love what you're saying there, and totally agree. And as we wrap up this part of the show, and we head into what I like to call the flash round, which is a bit of fun towards the end of the show. What it is for listeners out there is I ask Peter three questions. He gives me a quick answer. We don't have to go into chapter and verse, but a quick answer. And then he gets the chance to put me in the hot seats, but he's only allowed to ask me one question, which is a nice rule. It's a good thing being the host, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
There we go, right? So here we go. Drums on cue, right? So this is it. I think I know the answers to most of these, but I'm going to shoot today anyway. So what's more important for your business, profit or achieving your purpose?
Achieving my purpose, our purpose, not mine. Definitely, because if we achieve our purpose, profit is going to come as a byproduct of that.
Brilliant. There we go. Good answer. Okay. I think I know the answer to this one as well. Should small businesses be part of making a better future, a cleaner future for the world?
Absolutely. If you look at the global marketplace, small businesses form 99% of all business.
Yeah.
They employ more than half of all the talent globally. So if they don't participate, we only achieve a partial solution. But every single business has the opportunity and can make an impact.
Brilliant. Okay, and I don't know the answer to this one, so let's see how it goes. Breakfast, bacon and eggs or muesli?
I would say muesli, because I'm on a journey to really trim down that COVID fat, which I've put on, unfortunately, over the last 18 months. But bacon and egg would be where my heart goes. Muesli would be where my brain goes. But it doesn't hurt to have a variation and have boiled eggs without the bacon.
There we go. Right. Good one. Okay. Now over to you. Any questions that you, or any question that you'd like to ask me?
I would actually like to ask two, if that's okay, not one. Our first one is, what motivates you when you wake up every morning? What sort of gets you going?
Well, most people, most patients easy, right? So when I say it's easy, it comes back to pretty much the discussion we've had today, right? So I've got a big purpose. My purpose in life is to really work with entrepreneurs, founders, and executives, and help them use a system I've actually built to scale up themselves, scale up their influence, and get towards where they want to go. And I've got a huge passion about that. And that goes across not only the people I work with and the clients I work with, but also actually goes back into my family. So that same program, if you want to call it, or same system, I also use it and play with it with my kids as an example. So the motivation is large. I want to have a big impact. Me and my team want to have a big impact on society in general, and also on a smaller scale, on our families and the well-being of families and the lives of them.
Cool. That sounds really good. I mean, it sounds like you've got your own purpose very, very clearly nailed out. Second question. If you wake up tomorrow in Elon Musk's shoes, being the richest man on earth, what's the one thing you would change in this world?
The one thing I would change in this world if I was to wake up in Elon Musk's shoes. That's a good one, right? So listen, there's lots of different things you can change in the world, but let's be, you know, you can change the climate, you can change various things. I think simply, if it was the world, I think I'd actually look at individuals. I'd want to be able to allow people to control their minds a bit better, right? Because you know what's stopping you right now? It's those thoughts going through your head, because you can do it. Yeah, there's no one in this world that says you can't do it except for you. And that's the one thing. Maybe Musk, I don't even think Musk can change that, right? Maybe the guy above can, but it's that. Having that impact and that influence to really go out individual upon individual and give them the power and give them the knowledge to go off and live their life and live their life the way they want to live their life.
That's really inspirational, I have to say, Richard. I mean, it's very powerful words here. Well, that's been great. I love that question. Actually, it just came up in my mind. It wasn't prepared, but it was just funny. I mean, sometimes I sort of imagine myself being somebody very successful years from now, and what would I do? Because I know some of the big sort of leaders are getting a lot of stick for not doing enough.
Yeah.
Even though, for example, they create funds where they put billions to help.
Yeah, yeah.
But that, you know, it's still a small fraction of the wealth they have, which they cannot spend, even if they've got everything that it's in their mind they want to have. Yeah. So it's sometimes I sort of put myself in an imaginary state of, what if I was him or her, what would I do? So yeah, interesting.
I like it. It's a great question. I love being in the hot seat. So listen, as we awesome show today, as we wrap up, if folk want to, listeners want to get in touch with you, what's the best way?
I would say the best way is LinkedIn. I mean, if you share my details,
you put in the show notes,
the audience. Absolutely. I'll be very happy to connect with people. And if there's any way I can help, give them tips, I'll be very happy to do that. Obviously, I'm very busy, but I tend to respond to every single person who's messaging me. Could take a little while sometimes because I'm wearing many hats. We're still an early stage business, but I'll be very happy to help people. You know, it's one of the things I love doing.
Awesome. And yeah, reach out to Peter if you want. We'll definitely include all those details in the show notes. And, you know, listen, folks, if you haven't yet subscribed to the channel, please go and subscribe to it. It's www.scaleupconsulting.co.uk/media. Insert your details. You'll be getting this show and other shows on a weekly basis that will help you not only scale up your business, but also scale up yourself. So looking forward to the next episode. And Peter, awesome show today. Looking forward to obviously going live with us.
Great having you, Richard. Thank you very much. I really, really enjoyed this.